another rebound in a crowd by the Brock Ness Monster. Ooh, that would be Pedro. Ooh. Jim Bob Goley, holy moly. How about the Tasmanian Slovenian with the stop, drop, and pop? Hippity hop to the King's Herald Barbershop.
You're listening to the King's Herald Show, a bi-weekly NBA podcast that covers all the ups and downs, ins and outs of your one and only Sacramento Kings. As always, I'm your host, Will Griffith, and with me today, writer for the King's Herald, my co-host, Tony Zipteris. Tony, how's it going?
Will, I am good. I wish the Kings were good, but this has been the season so far, ups and downs, so we'll talk about it on the podcast today.
100%. He's a former Sacramento Kings head coach, GM, and color analyst. He's the GM of a WNBA champion, Indiana Basketball Hall of Famer. It's the true pride of French Lick himself, Jerry Reynolds. Jerry, as always, an absolute pleasure to have you today.
Well, it'd been a lot more pleasant had the Kings, not crapped a bit yesterday, but that's, we're going to do what we're going to do.
Amen to that. So there are 19 games to go in the 23-24 regular season, and the Sacramento Kings are no closer to being figured out by their opponents, by themselves, in particular the fan base. They're only 5-4 since the All-Star break, with two nail-biting wins against the Western Conference worst Spurs, bookending wins against the fourth-seeded Clippers, third-seeded Timberwolves, ninth-seeded Lakers. They've also suffered losses to an incredibly injured Heat squad, the Nuggets, and the below 500 Bulls and Rockets. So guys, as usual, I want to start off with getting things from a little bit higher view. How do you guys feel like the Kings have played since the All-Star break? And if you want to jump into even more recently, if there's a change in your thinking, please feel free to do so there too.
Well, you know, for me, they kind of are who I thought they were. It's a team that has to really play at their best. If they're playing at their best, they can beat a lot of teams, most teams. And if they're not really locked in and focused, they can get beat by anybody. We saw that early in the year. That's kind of been the trend. They're a fun team to watch most nights, but they depend on making threes. And when they're not making threes, they're vulnerable to anybody in the league. And, we've seen it over and over.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything there, really. Something that I think is interesting about this team and where they are slotted in the Western Conference is that we've paid, or at least I'll speak for myself, much closer attention to what the Kings have done than these other teams in the Western Conference. Like, I'm paying attention, but you watch a team night in, night out, the warts show themselves more clear, and the good parts of them show themselves more clear. And the one thing I would say about the Kings, as frustrated as I am about their up and down play, especially on defense, the Western Conference is kind of in the same boat. Like, a lot of those teams that are playing these must-win games, the Clippers are 5-5 in their last 10. Timberwolves are 5-5 in their last 10. They just lost Karl Anthony Towns. The Suns are 5-5 in their last 10. Dallas also 5-5 in their last 10. Lakers and Warriors are 6-4 in their last 10, which is right where the Kings are at too. So coming out of the All-Star break, we thought it would be like a mad dash for the Western Conference seeding to kind of figure out who's going to slot where. And yes, the Kings have had frustrating losses. I'm frustrated by the Bulls loss, the Rockets loss, but the rest of the West is kind of in the same boat. So it's, I don't know how to talk about this team anymore, because it's going to take the playoffs to find out who they are. Because in the pack of Western Conference teams, I don't see a huge divide outside of the tippy top with Denver and some of those teams. But the Kings, to me, they can still compete with anyone. It's just unfortunate that we don't see their best effort night in, night out.
Well, the only thing, that always strikes me is obviously, as Tony said, as fans of a team, you follow that team and basically the losing to the teams that you think you're supposed to beat really hits you a little harder than the fact that it's happening to most teams. I always say, just as a point of reference, I think the year the Chicago Bulls won 72 games and were one of the truly all-time great teams, lost to two expansion teams that year, so Toronto and Charlotte. So, it's inexplicable at times, but I think with an 82 game schedule, you just simply don't bring your best game, and the other team, you catch a team when they're bringing their best. And I think it's happened to the Kings a little more than most, but only a little more.
Tony kind of pointed out how the whole Western Conference is this way. Is this just a matter of the league having more parity than it usually has? Is this a matter of teams are playing more games or just tired? What is it that you think, Jerry, is causing basically the entire Western Conference playoff race to kind of hit a muddy spot and slog down a little bit?
Well, I think parity is really part of it. There's so many good teams, maybe no great teams. That's another thing. You know, I think Denver's the best team in the West. That doesn't mean, you know, they're not, I don't think, a great team. They're good enough to win a championship, but not when you look at the greats of some we've seen with the level of talent. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of parity. And I think that there's a lot of talent on every team. Every team's got enough players that on a given night that, you know, they can rise up there. It's like the Spurs. The Kings were very lucky to beat the Spurs. Yes. You know, then they go down to Golden State and beat Golden State pretty handily. And that was without Wembanyama, I think, too, you know. So, you know, that's – and Vassell didn't even play against the Warriors. So, you know, it's like, say, I do kind of pay attention to some of the other teams and how occasionally, you know, they crap the bed too, you know.
I will say that this is how I cope with being a Kings fan at this point, where they're no longer the 17 seasons of BS. This is a team that has expectations this year. I'm in the public a lot and I get to talk to a lot of different people. So I talk to Warriors fans and Lakers fans, and like, I'll ask them questions that I know will stress them out just to make me feel better, specifically Lakers fans. But like, if I had to switch places or teams with the Lakers, you know, you got Anthony Davis and LeBron James, but there's a ticking clock on that Lakers team where they're below the Kings. They're six games above 500, but you got 2 years of LeBron left. Maybe, you know, the Warriors, that's a team that's kind of sunsetting. A Phoenix, if I were a fan of the Phoenix team, I would have an ulcer right now. The Suns would have put me in the hospital a couple of times this year, and they'll have no draft picks if they don't win a championship here real quick. They're not going to have draft picks until I'm going to be in my 50s pretty much. And so it's one of those things that, like, I get to decompress a little bit being a Kings fan because I'm stressed, but like, our worst contract is Harrison Barnes, and he's not all that bad of a contract, and we've got a lot of assets left. I'm much happier being a Kings fan and stressed about the Kings playing inconsistent basketball than I would be as a Warriors fan, as a Lakers fan, as a Suns fan. Those would just put me in the hospital. So I'm not asking the Kings to do that. I'm fine with the Kings specifically because I can, to Tony's point, there is enough parity that I don't have to feel too stressed about it.
Well, you know, I had to read one of the comments in the Herald, you know, when one fan was mentioning and, you know, basically it just said, you know, I still remember all the 25 and 30 win teams. And they basically said, I still really enjoy this team. It's a good team. And that's kind of way I feel, you know. I mean, sometimes I forget that, but I really look forward to the games. Then I get frustrated during the game sometime, but that's, that's because you care. But this is a good team. It's, you know, we would like for it to be better than it is. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not a, you know, it's not a bottom dragger like it was. So, you know, and they've proven, and like I said, they've proven they can beat anybody and get beat by anybody, you know, which is not unusual in the NBA.
So I guess we'll ask it this way only because we're going to basically ask the same six questions as we ask every week with the season, I feel like. What is it about the season that makes any team down 20 to the Kings suddenly the most dangerous team in the league? Like, is this strictly a defensive thing? Is this the Kings getting cocky because they get in their heads because, hey, Victor Wembanyama isn't playing, so we know we're going to crush him so we can sit on cruise control for three quarters? What is it about the Kings specifically this year that allows them to give up all these leads?
I think if I had to say, you know, one thing to me, it's just they're a poor defensive team. And so the other team can always score. and of course the Kings can really score most nights, but when the 3-point shots start missing and they're vulnerable. I mean, more so than a lot of teams who have, you know, I think just simply more talent. You know, I think the Kings, you know, it's maybe sound a little negative here, but I mean, I've watched a team for 60 games. You know, I think they've got, you know, basically the problem they've got is they've got some really good players, and several of them should be eighth, ninth, and 10th man, as opposed to a couple starters. and that, you know, that shows up. Yeah. You know, this is it's not as talented, in my opinion, and I know it probably offends some fans, but it's not nearly as talented as team as maybe we want to believe when you look at rosters on other teams and what it takes. You know, I think there are obviously a couple of starters light, and you know, with obviously you got a six man that's as good as anybody's six man, but if somehow you could get two guys better than a couple of the starters, I think, you know, quite honestly, Barnes and Herter come to mind, that and they'd be really good reserves, then you'd have then you got a contender.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, so I don't, you know, Coach Brown, I mean, you can, you know, hopefully motivate it and get them, you know, in the playoffs. I think they're a playoff team, but to say they could, you know, realistically, I don't expect them to beat Denver in a 7-game series or the Pelicans in a 7-game series. I think they're, this year, I do think they're better than the Warriors, but that doesn't mean they would beat them.
True. Very true, Jerry. Tony, we'll get to the supporting cast here in a second that Jerry was talking about, but I'm curious, how do you feel as a fan about these Kings games where they give up a 20-point lead? Sometimes they come back and win. You know, we're talking about the Lakers game earlier last week. We're talking about giving up a 20-point lead to the Spurs and having to come back and win. What? How do you feel as a fan about the way that they conduct their business when they're up big?
Well, I think it's a few different things, but I think the biggest one, and I pulled this number today, teams shoot 39% from three against the Kings. They're the worst defensive three-point shooting team in the league. So when you allow teams on average to shoot at the rate of an elite three-point shooter across the board every night, then you can give up big leads. Like if every team is going to shoot 40% against you from three, then you cannot guard the three. It's like a very good three-point shooter is taking that shot every single time. And then on the Kings side, they're the worst free throw shooting team in the league. So you talk about blowing leads in end of game situations. If you can't hit your free throws at all and you can't defend the three, and then on their side offensively, they shoot the fourth most three-pointers as any team in the league, and they only hit them at the 15th best three-point percentage. So you're a high-volume three-point shooting team that hits them at an average rate. Your defense gives up a shit ton of threes, and they hit them at a great rate. And also, you can't shoot free throws. I feel like that's a great recipe for coughing up leads. And this is one area where I'm kind of on both sides of the fence with Mike Brown. I think Mike Brown's a great coach. He's been a great coach for this team. There is certainly limitations on this roster, but I do think they can be better defensively than they are. They shouldn't be the worst in the league. At least in my opinion, they shouldn't be. A team like Houston last night, they're a young team too. And they're just, to me, seem light years ahead of the Kings physicality-wise, which that's partly personnel, but also just a better defensive team in general. So I give Mike Brown somewhat of a pass for the defense because I know the roster is not a highly capable defensive roster. But things like dead last in the league at defending the three, you should be able to clear that bar. So I do think, you know, despite the personnel issues, this team can be better defensively than they are, and we just have not seen it.
You know, one of the things, too, that it seems to me like leads to that, and that are all great points, is that it seems like the Kings, you know, as opposed to watching the Rockets, they would help out in the paint and get back to the three-point shooters. Mm-hmm. Our guys go to help, and they don't really help, and they don't get back.
Yeah,
it's like, if you're not going to really help, then stay on the shooters. You know, it's but I just thought it's such a different look. I mean, I was thinking, well, these damn Rockets, I mean, they're getting in there, and, you know, of course, Sabonis was probably handled ball worse than he's ever handled in his life. But they had something to do with it. They really were getting back there and challenging things, any kind of dribble or pass or whatever, and still getting back to the shooters to where, you know, I didn't think the Kings had a lot of good, really good three-point shots, to be honest with you. Not like the Rockets did. Mm-hmm. You know, feet planted, taking a good deep breath and letting it fly.
Jerry, Tony brought up basically scheme versus versus player personnel. You've been a GM, you've been a coach. Do you see one or another being the thing that's really lacking? Is it Mike Brown's scheme with the players that he has, or is it more the players that can't fulfill a successful Mike Brown scheme?
You know, I kind of think it's a little of both, to be honest. You know, I think the, you know, the defensive talent on the team is I think individually is lacking. So that's individuals, then team, then the scheme. I'm not sure, you know, that he is comfortable in any of the defensive schemes. You know, I mean, certainly when you play Ellis or Davion, your defense looks a little different. You know, I thought the other night, a couple times now in the last few games, they played the zone and getting better at that. And I still think that's something that should work for them if they, you know, kind of spend more time with and get better at it. But so maybe a little of both. You know, there's no easy answers, that's for sure. I don't think it's, you know, it's not guys not trying. I mean, I think they could try, you know, maybe try harder, but sometimes, but, you know, yeah, it's kind of like Rick Adelman used to say, it's hard to be a great defender or a great, great defensive team when you don't have any great defenders. And that's true. And that's kind of where the Kings are. It doesn't mean you can't be competent though. You know, and I think that's kind of the problem.
Is that, Jerry, and I don't want to get off too off track, but this made me think of it. Is that kind of why we haven't seen Keon Ellis, or is there an explanation as to why Keon Ellis, who is known as a very good defender, hasn't gotten much playing time or incredibly inconsistent playing time as the season's gone on? He seems to be a very good defender, and when he is in the game, he makes an impact on the defensive end. What is it that Mike Brown sees, maybe in practice, but on the floor that makes him go, we're not going to play that Mitchell Monk Ellis lineup or that Fox Monk and Ellis lineup? Like, what is it that Mike Brown sees where he's not playing Ellis nearly as much?
Yeah, you know, I don't, of course, don't know, but I suspect, and I, you know, when it really comes down to it, I think Coach Brown coaches on the basis of offense. You know, all the talk about defense, but the truth is, you know, he's playing guys based on what produces offensively, and that's fine if you can, you know, outscore people. But I'm kind of with you there. I think that, you know, Ellis, for his limited minutes, has been pretty darn productive, and he's one of those guys that when he doesn't score, he still helps you a little bit.
Yep.
And you've got enough other guys who can score. So, yeah, that'd be my only thing. You know, they talk more about defense than they actually, you know, I mean, we you know, it's one thing to talk about defense and then basically sub on the basis of offense.
Sure. Yeah. Tony, how have you felt about that three-guard lineup, or maybe specifically how Ellis has played this last few games?
I think, which is kind of, it's weird that the Kings have dropped some winnable games, because I think this is the best that both Davion and Keon have been together all season. I think both of them are playing pretty good minutes off the bench. And this is where, again, Mike Brown is just so, tis credit, I guess. He seems like a player's coach, and he's so hesitant to screw up with that starting lineup. And I'm sure that can be a good thing from the players, but I'm on the outside. I can kind of feel however I want to feel about it and not get emotional about the fact that you've had like this continuity in the same starting lineup for two seasons in a row. But I see someone like Kevin Huerter, who's really struggling, and Kevin Huerter has struggled all year compared to his career numbers, but even more so since the All-Star break. He's shooting 33% from three. He's averaging 9 points a game, and his minutes are going down. He's only at 25 minutes a game right now. That's where I think, and I know this would be an aggressive maneuver, but that's where I look at someone like Keon, who is actually shooting better than Huerter from three since the All-Star break. Keon's shooting 40% from three. You can move Keon into the starting lineup. He's a much better defender, and just get a different look out there in that starting unit where you do have one good perimeter defender who does close out on threes pretty good. That I would love to see something like that, but I understand it's so much easier for me to say that outside of the walls than if you're Mike Brown and you have to have those difficult conversations. But I do think at some point here, you got to try something different with your group. And he just hasn't with the starters really at all. He hasn't even tried to kind of switch up who's playing with who. And I think Herter is the perfect place to start because he's been struggling. But I don't know that we'll ever see it. The more that the Kings go down this season with this group, Mike Brown just seems so hesitant to mess with that lineup. So I'm not holding my breath, but I would certainly love to see more Keon Ellis.
Jerry, how do you feel about a possible starting lineup change where you move Keon Ellis into it? Is that something that's even feasible in your mind?
Oh, I think it is. Yeah, I agree with Tony, to be honest with you. And maybe for a little different reasons. I'm just looking at the long, not just getting the team maybe a little different look now and making them better. But I guess the question I would pose is Kevin Herter the guy you think is going to be your starting point guard, off guard, 2 or 3 years down the road if you want to be contending in the West? And my opinion is no, he's not. And I think you've got to get better there. Is Ellis going to be better? He's going to be different, may be better. But I mean, I still think, you know, it's like, well, at some point you got to kind of look at, okay, we've got to find out how to get better if we want to ever be better than we are as a, you know, whether it's a championship team or just a contender, which in my mind are currently not. And so and that's where I would start. I'd say, you know, Kevin, hey, we appreciate you. And you can be really make the bench stronger and probably help his game a little bit in the fact he'd play against second line guys a little bit. So I really think it's time to do it. You know, the team needs a little spark, you know, they need a little something. And certainly he and Keegan, you know, they can switch out on guys a lot better. You know, I mean, that's a problem Davion has. He's small that he gets, if he gets switched off, it kind of creates problems. But I like the fact Keon, he, you know, guard guys, you know, 6 foot to 6'7", you know, and actually other than Keegan, you don't have anybody much like that.
Sure. Is this something that with 19 games to go, it would be too late to implement on this version of the King squad, something that probably needs to be, you know, taking into consideration the offseason? Or do you feel like Mike Brown can pull the emergency brake and throw Keon Ellis in there with this last 19 game, you know, stretch and get him ready for a playoff run?
Well, that is the question, of course. And I guess my feeling would be that Coach Brown has seen these guys 60 some games and he's seen the other teams in the league 60 some games. And at some point you're saying, okay, we got to beat some of these guys. Can we beat them the way we are? And so will this move make us better? If it does make you better, then I think you ought to do it. And you don't know, but I'm not sure what the risk is either. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just think there's a chance that you could get a little better. Pretty sure you get better defensively and offensively. Actually, with Ellis not shooting as much, that in itself might help you offensively.
So let's talk a little bit about the struggles of the rest of the supporting cast. We've talked about Kevin Herter, obviously. You know, what's going on with Harrison Barnes, the bench outside of basically Malik Monk? The supporting players have been basically struggling in a way that they weren't since the beginning of this season. Are the Kings just getting scouted better, Jerry? I know we've talked about this before. Or is there a monkey wrench in the game plan or something that's just not working right on the bench? Could you explain that for us?
Well, they're certainly well scouted. I give the coaches and the league credit for that. I know that. But I mean, it really doesn't explain, you know, I mean, I think Trey Lyles has just really not been very effective lately, you know, and I mean, turning down shots in my mind, you know, turning down shots to escape dribble to go nowhere. It's really, you know, he's a better player than that. So he hasn't been as nearly as good as he was earlier. You know, Harrison is good some games and some games he's not very good. you know, he's productive. And that's the scariest part. I mean, you look at his stats, he's a productive player, but he just blends into a fault where he doesn't isn't nearly as aggressive. And Keegan, I think teams are scouting him pretty well. And I think they, you know, they're doing a better job on him, and which, you know, you figured that'd happen, that now he's at the stage where he's got to figure out how to, you know, okay, you're a big boy, you're in second year, and people now are scouting you, and they're seeing what you like to do. And so that's part of, for you to get better, you've got to deal with that. So, but the, you know, this, I mean, this team, it seems to me like if Monk is not having a good game, it's tough for him to win.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's just as about as valuable as Fox or Sabonis when you really get down to it.
Tony, how have you felt about the supporting cast and their struggles this season?
Yeah, it's been much like many of the Kings, an up and down year for a lot of them, but the downs have been too prevalent. And for a team that has playoff expectations, you need more consistency than the Kings have. For sure. We talked about Herter. Herter has been probably the weakest link for the longest stretch, because it's been most of the year for him. Barnes, his efficiency is good. His efficiency is better than last year in a lot of spaces. He just doesn't shoot ever. He's just so uninvolved, which again, that's comes back down to scheme, I guess. He's another guy that if you moved him to the bench, then you might get more shots out of him because he has less competition in those lineups. But again, Mike Brown just hesitant to do that. Monk has been great all year. I'm sure we'll talk more about him. One guy I do want to highlight, because we talked about defense, is Alex Len, who I think continues to be very good, although his minutes are pretty inconsistent. But if you look at Alex Len, and I was on Cleaning the Glass, kind of looking up his on-off numbers, he has a bigger impact on this team's defensive ability than anyone on the roster. Teams are scoring 10 points less per 100 possessions when he's on the court, and they're shooting 6.3% worse when he's on the court. And those are team highs by a wide margin from anyone else on the roster. So teams are shooting less when Len is on the court, which adds up. He's a big body in the paint. And the Kings are actually better offensively when Len's on the court too, probably because defense leads to offense, and he's the only guy that is getting stops in the paint in there when he's on the court. So I'd like to see Brown adjust to a little bit more Alex Len. I think Davion, for as much as we've talked about players playing poorly off the bench, since the All-Star break, Davion is shooting incredibly well. I think he's at like 50% from three since the All-Star break. He's averaging 7 points a game in only something like 15 minutes. So his scoring has gotten ratcheted way up. And I think we're at the point of the season where it's you lean into the players that are playing well, and you start to feel very comfortable about leaning out of the guys that are struggling. Just like, you know, Mike Brown's playoff rotation got much tighter. He started cutting guys' minutes, cutting guys out of the rotation entirely. I think now's the time to do that. So if you're not playing well, if you're Kevin Herter and you're struggling, you got to hit the bench. I'm sorry. If you're a Barnes and you're struggling, you got to hit the bench. We got to play the guys that are going to give you the impact on a nightly basis. And it's been hard for Brown to find out who those consistent guys are, but there have been some. I think there got guys like Len and Davion deserve a little bit more minutes here, and maybe guys like Lyles and others who have struggled should have their minutes pulled back a bit.
You know, I wouldn't be too. I would kind of like to see him play Len and Sabonis together some.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could. I mean, it's and certainly Domas, he's shooting three better than anybody else. You know, you'd kind of like to see how he'd do on that corner three. You know, I'd have to say, you know, be surprised if he couldn't make that. Anyway, just definitely give him a really different look, you know, and a different physical presence, that's for sure.
Jerry, is there anything outside of like injury management or something like that as to why Alex Len hasn't gotten more minutes this season?
Well, I think I think the coaching staff just weren't sure who they wanted to play. You know, early on it was JaVale, and then it was Alex, and they went back to JaVale, and I think they're pretty well settled on Alex now, so that's part of it. And then they, you know, when they go small, they played Lyle some at the small ball five, which occasionally it works, not near like I thought it would, to be honest. So I think that's, you know, as a coach, I think, you know, you're just not sure. And JaVale, to his credit, I mean, I think Alex is the better choice, but he's had good minutes. It's just one of those things. He'll maybe make a mistake that Alex won't. You know, that's maybe the difference.
So we're going to roll over to talk about Fox for a second here. In his seven post All-Star break games, he missed two due to a bum knee. Fox is averaging 30.8 points, 54% from the field, 2.3 steals, 6.8 assists. He's kind of resurged back into the Fox of earlier the season, but he's just shooting 22.9% from deep on 5.8 attempts. I only brought this up because I saw a tweet from King Charles writer Tim Maxwell, who pointed out that De'Aaron Fox is down to 36% from deep for the season, and he shot just 31% from deep since the start of the new year. Obviously, it's a bit nitpicky of me to ask with Fox kind of regaining his scoring form elsewhere, but is that three-point shooting, is that a natural regression over a long season? Is Fox slumping from deep out there because he's focusing more on getting into the paint, or is it due to something else?
Well, those are good questions. I mean, I think with De'Aaron, I do think he probably takes a tough three or every game he doesn't need to take. Yeah. You know, he's one, and it's almost for sure if he makes one, he's going to take another one pretty soon. But I kind of wish, and I think probably reading a lot of the comments in the Herald, is that a lot of fans would like to see him take fewer. I'm in that boat. You know, I think he needs to be, he is a threat. He needs to continue to look for it, but his real strength is getting into the paint and really the mid-range shot in particular. You know, I mean, he's as good as anybody in the league there. And so, you know, and he can draw fouls. That, you know, sadly he's not making free throws like he should,
yeah.
but that's another issue entirely. But I just think they've got other guys who probably are better 3-point shooters than De'Aaron. And so, you know, let them shoot more threes, him less, but you know, he can, I mean, I think De'Aaron's one of those guys who can get 27, 28 points a game on 20 shots. And so that wins for you. And he can do it by getting the high percentage 2-point shot and drawing some 3-point opportunities that way. So,
Tony, how have you felt about De'Aaron Fox's scoring of late? And then on the flip side of that, how have you felt about that 3-point percentage dropping from the start of the new year?
Yeah, you can see, I mean, Fox, for a lot of the early parts of the season, Fox is playing like an MVP candidate. We had those conversations, and we haven't seen enough of those nights during the last few months. But I think the Lakers win is a great example. He drops 44 points. Looks like the best player on the court, and it was the Kings' best win they've had in this recent stretch. So he's still capable of reaching those heights. I just wish we could see more of it. If it's the 3-point shooting doesn't bother me a ton, because like Jerry, I wouldn't mind him shooting less of those anyways. Obviously, I want the ones that he is shooting to go in, but I'm not overly concerned about that, because Fox was an All-Star last year with a pretty busted 3-point shot. So he can still be very effective and not have that shot if he can hit them. Fantastic, but that's not kind of the Kings actually probably got too reliant on Fox bailing them out from three, because so many of the other shooters were struggling. So if Fox drops down a few percentage points on his three, but we can get Keegan and Barnes shooting more and Herter shooting better, then that's okay with me. So also, I guess it's worth mentioning he's had some shoulder injuries, some arm injuries that can affect your shot too. He's clearly to me still struggling with something. Some nights he looks better than others. It's unfortunate that he's kind of been in and out of this out of the lineups. Hopefully he can stay healthy, but there's enough factors there that makes me not overly concerned just yet that he's a total zero on from the perimeter.
Yeah, I think he has to be a threat out there. And I think he's good enough shooter. He's a threat. So, you know, in my mind, he, as a 3-point shooter, he should be the kind of 3-point shooter. If you give me one, I'll take it. But really doesn't need to be hunting him. You know, that'd be, in a nutshell, my mind is because, yeah, if you're going to give me a wide open one now and then, get two or three a game, I'll take them. Then if I'm making a couple of them, I might hunt one then. But, you know, but I think that's, you know, it's kind of a case where, you know, it's like anybody, know what your strengths are, you know.
Yeah.
You know, why are you one of the elite talents in this league? Well, it's not your overall shooting. It's your ability to get to the basket and put pressure on the defense. I mean, he's spectacular in that way most nights. And so do what you do well.
We're not going to highlight all the games that that have gone on since last we talked, but I will like to mention, just because it builds off of that, Jerry, the game against the Los Angeles Lakers, and yes, I'm using this as an attempt to just talk shit about the Lakers. He cooked Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell all night. There was a point in the fourth quarter where I think they just stopped guarding him because they knew he was going to score. I think he wound up with like 32 points in the paint that game, which was like one of the top five in the league this whole year. And it was one of those things that, like, it was nice to see that version of De'Aaron Fox just absolutely cooking two guys who could not stop him for anything. And he didn't, you know, he didn't score out of his 44 points. He hit 2 3-pointers. Everything else was just in the paint, getting to the basket, getting those little runners and floaters and little jump shots from there. That's the De'Aaron Fox that I know and love.
Yeah, I mean, and really, Anthony Davis didn't give him a lot of trouble.
No.
So, I mean, that, to me, that was like, okay, you know, this is. I mean, you know, you don't get to go against Reeves and D'Angelo Russell every night, that's for sure. Yeah. But still, I mean, there's not many guys that can deal with him. And so that's, you know, I think we covered it. I think he's just a guy that, yeah, you want him shooting threes and be a threat from there, but that just sets up his where he's great. I always kind of go back to, you know, being the Tiny Archibald thing. And, they didn't really shoot, but he was a good enough outside shooter that you had to cover him. And when you covered him, you couldn't stop him because he'd get to the hoop and score. Make plays.
Okay, so we're gonna roll over to I know this is almost like a bi-weekly segment now, but we're gonna talk about Sabonis's double-double or triple-double streak. Guys, just so that we can give some context to the listeners, is this the Kings coaching staff finally optimizing how to use him? Yeah, this streak is, I think he's tied with Jerry Lucas for 46 games. Is this something Sabonis would have done last year with two good thumbs? Or as I've seen on Twitter, Is this a friendly scorekeeper with a personal vendetta against Jerry Lucas? Is he getting soft rebounds and assists? Is he a handoff assist merchant? Or is this explain the double-double streak, Jerry, in terms of history for Sabonis?
Well, I say this for Domas. I think he's clearly better than he was last year. I mean, more so offensively than anything else. Because he really does use his right hand more, and the little half hook is very effective in deep. And then, you know, the 3-point shot, 42 or 43%. I mean, doesn't shoot it much, but so he offensively he's doing more. And you know, as far as assists and all, and of course that's a key for him, is to he does look to find the 3-point shooters, and when they're making them, he's getting a lot of assists. I don't know. He leads the league in screen assists by a huge margin, which doesn't surprise anybody. But I think he's having a great season. To be honest with you, I thought, you know, the last game against the Rockets, I thought was it. Even though he had tremendous stats scoring wise and rebounds, he was just awful with the ball.
Yeah.
Just awful. You know, I thought he's playing with boxing gloves there for a while. But I mean. You know, you can't, but it, you know, one thing about him, you just can't question the effort, the mental toughness. I mean, the guy busts his hump every play, you know, I mean, and if everybody played that hard, the Kings probably would win a couple more games. I mean, that's really the truth. But I think he's getting better. You know, I do. I think he's just a better player. I think, you know, I don't know if they're using him any different. I think they're encouraging him to look for his offense a little more. Sure. And I think he is. And I think it's also why teams are really, you know, packing the paint a little more because of him. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really, as soon as he gets the ball or puts it down, they're really sending guys at him. He's got to, you know, kind of learn from that, realize that, yeah, well, if you're double team, move the ball before the double gets there. You just got to. I don't care if you're Domantas Sabonis or Hakeem Olajuwon. Don't play against the double teams.
Tony, as a fan, how have you taken to this double-double streak?
The streak in and of itself, I don't know. Double-doubles don't get me all that excited. I am very excited about Sabonis in general. And to Jerry's point, I came away from that Rockets game thinking, man, this is like the worst game I've ever seen Sabonis play. And I look at the box score. He's got 25 points. He shot 10 from 11 from the field, 5 from 6 from the free throw line, 15 rebounds, 8 assists. He did have the 9 turnovers, which is unacceptable for him. But even still, that's about as worse as it gets for Sabonis. And he was still a hugely important player for the Kings. So if that's your worst night, then you've got a pretty good player there. And I think the more I watch Sabonis, the more I realize just how bad the matchup was for him against the Warriors, because the Warriors could dedicate Draymond and Kevon Looney to Sabonis. And so much of what makes Sabonis effective is how hard he plays. And if he can tire out the opposing team's center that actually matters offensively, you've seen the Kings have a lot of success against those teams. Like, they've played Jokic really well. They've played the Timberwolves really well. Because Sabonis, someone has to guard Sabonis too. But when you're against the Warriors, where Looney and Draymond don't need to do really anything offensively, and they can focus all their energy on Sabonis, you run into issues. So I look forward to seeing Sabonis in a playoff series against a center who their opposing team also relies on. So you can hopefully see what Sabonis does in tiring out opposing big men when they actually matter on the offensive end. So I'm hoping he can kind of rectify his reputation around the league with a strong playoff series. And if it's anyone other than the Warriors, I think he has a pretty good shot of doing that.
Okay. Last thing before we roll over to the Patreon question of the day, we could just kind of been hearing it more and more. The whispers have turned into straight talking, and Malik Monk is already the sixth man of the year in De'Aaron Fox's mind. Guys, how do you feel about Malik Monk as a sixth man of the year candidate? Is there anyone at this point who challenges Malik?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I think of some guys that are really interesting, having good years, that play off the bench a lot. I think Murphy for the New York Pelicans, I mean, he's a bucket. And a Bogey at Atlanta is having a terrific year.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be in that mix. And I'm not sure, you know, just who else. But I mean, I just don't see anybody that's had the kind of year he's had, because, you know, most six men come in and maybe improve the team a little, but Malik's the only one I know of that not only, you know, helps you win often, he's the guy that leads you to the wins.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt that it, at least logically, I mean, he's your King's no worse than third best player, third most valuable player. He just doesn't start.
Yeah, Jerry, to your point, I was just thinking about that Minnesota game earlier this year. How many bench players, you know, just decide to take over in the second half and wind up with 39 points, 5 of 8 from three, and just completely dominate a team that was not ready for him to come in and do that?
Yeah, well, in 35 in the second half, you know how many six-man can do that? None, zero. Yeah. Probably, I mean, you have to look at the all-time great six-man in history. I mean, that, you know, the John Havlicek's for a while, or Kevin McHale's before they became starters, all-timers, you know, and Michael Cooper, you know. But, hey, you know, I'm not saying they're not better players than him or more valuable, but in the big but. Today's game, I just get scared when the thought of, you know, Kings have got to keep him. I mean, you know, there's four guys they just have to build around.
And
add to. So that's, I think, if there's anything I've seen, I truly believe in, it's there's four that you must keep and build around. And it doesn't mean you can't keep three or four others.
Tony, how do you feel about Malik Monk's play of late?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure someone can pull up a name, but I don't know who else could do what Monk did against the Timberwolves. You have no Fox. It's a must-win game against a Western Conference playoff rival. And Monk, you know, scores 39 points, beats Timberwolves on the road without Fox. Just a great effort from him. And I think we talk about his scoring all the time. And he gets plenty of credit for his passing, too. I don't want to say no one talks about his passing. But his passing in the pick and roll is not just good. It's, like, impossible to guard. He makes the right decisions in the split second last moment. You watch defenders, and it doesn't matter who it is. It could be with Sabonis. It could be with Len. It could be with JaVale McGee. It almost doesn't matter who's setting the pick. He is going to make the right read at the last possible second, with just in the nick of time to get open layups for these big men. And it's almost to the point where when Jerry talks about having to keep him, I wonder what he would do in a starting role as a lead guard for a team being able to run the pick and roll 20 times a night with your starting center. I mean, he's been so good in those scenarios that it would be interesting for a team to offer him a lot of money to start, because I'm not so sure he couldn't start and be one of the top 15 or 20 guards in the league as a starter too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, he really is in those pick and rolls. I mean, he's so much better than Herder or Fox.
So much better, you know? Yeah.
I mean, he just is not even close. You know, I think, you know, Davion or Keon, they can't do those things. You know, they turn the corners and, you know, occasionally they can, you know, find something. But he's terrific. I think he could start. Certainly, I think he has the ability to be a starter in this league and be a 20-point-a-game guy. I really do. I hope he doesn't want that. And if he does, you know, it's like I won't sign unless I start. And I'd say, well, you're a starter.
Tony, I'm going to need you to go ahead and edit out everything you said about Malik Monk, because on the off chance that he hears it, you just brought the price up another $5 million a year. Nice. So sorry, guys. No one's ever going to hear this one.
He's doing it himself.
He is. And, you know, I've said, you know, many times, and I think the best thing the Kings have going for them, you know, with the amount they can pay, is that so many teams are capped out.
Yeah.
You know, especially ones that would really like to get him. They really don't have the money. That's why I think that's the best chance the Kings have to keep him. You know what I mean? People say, well, he'll take a hometown discount. Well, maybe, you know, and I mean, I don't think, generally speaking, most players will take much of a hometown discount. You know, that's why I always say, you know, if you got to pay a Bobby Portis $5 million more than the Milwaukee Bucks to get him, he will leave.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, he would leave.
Okay.
I'm just so depressed. I was watching Naz Reid last night.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I just about gagged. That's a guy that can play. Should be playing big minutes.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, really, I mean, I understand why he doesn't there, and he's fine, but that's a starter. That guy's a starting four in this league.
And you want to talk about a hometown discount, Jerry. Naz Reid gave it to him for a lot cheaper than what I was expecting.
Yeah, me too. It's like, holy cow. And he did it, you know, before he even got to the market, you know, type thing. And I think, I think he cost himself a lot of money.
Well, we're going to roll over, Tony, to the Patreon question of the day.
All right. Thanks, Will. On every episode of this podcast, we ask at least one question from our Kings Herald patrons. You can submit questions at patreon.com/KingsHerald or on the website or on Twitter. And any question that does get submitted will get answered, whether it's here on the main show or once a month. We record a Patreon exclusive Q&A where all the leftover questions do get asked. This week's question comes from Greg Wissinger, who asked this in our Kings Herald Slack, but I thought it was a really good question. I just wanted to get Jerry's take on it because he would be the guy to ask this. But Greg asks, you are now handed the clipboard and in charge of coaching the Kings for the remainder of the season. What changes, if any, are you making?
Ooh, Greg, that's a great question. Well, I think I'd start by trying to come up with a way to improve the defense. You know, it's not good enough. And the only way I can think, you know, is by, you know, doing more, using zone more, using, you know, really tempo change things. I mean, picking up full court more. You've got, you know, I mean, yeah, you don't want to have Fox out there pressing full court 40 minutes, but he could. But I mean, certainly with Davion and Keon, guys like that, that's their strength. So I would like to see this team, you know, extend their defense. If you want to keep them away, at least, you know, make them use some of the clock to get into play. I just don't think we do enough of that. You know, it's 24-second clock, same for everybody. Yeah, make them use a bunch of it. That, and like I say, the zone. So the defensive part, those would be the two things there. And probably we've already talked about trying to utilize Keon Ellis more. You know, I like the way Davion's playing, but I think he's a little more limited. Mm-hmm. and probably is not as good a fit with Fox, because Fox is looking to score, which he should be. So those would be some, you know, personnel things. And I would probably be honest, Greg, I'd probably have a hook ready for Kevin. You know, I just would. You know, I'm thinking down the stretch, you know, I'd be say we've got to get better some way. And you can't change, you can't bring new players in at this stage. So you got to find a way to get better if you can with existing personnel. And that means utilizing it differently. And I think as we talked about earlier and Tony talked, I mean, I just think Keon, you know, might help the starting five. And I think with once Kevin, you know, kind of understood, he could really might improve his game. You know, coming off the bench. Well, that's, he did a lot of that with the Hawks when they went to the Eastern Finals. So it's not, you know, he's getting paid the same. I mean, you know, I'd give him, say, everybody, I'd, you know, say, Kevin, I'd come here. I'll give you a big hug if you need one, but this is what we need. You know, if you're going to, you know, we can hug it out, but you know, this is something we've got to try to find a way to get better for the team. Let's see if we can't do this. So that sort of thing. That other than that, you know, I mean, I don't know what goes on in the locker room. I probably, you know, I don't know if Coach Brown, you know, if he gets, you know, a little bit on their butts a little bit, I would say, don't be afraid to. Yeah. They're grown men and they're paid to play this game and they're paid very well. They need to be reminded of that. And so I think sometimes that's the other thing too, is that the only thing negative I'd say is that we seem to be talking about defense a lot more than we're doing, getting better at it. And I think you gotta, you know, if you want better defense, you've got to start subbing based on that a little bit. You know, guys understand. You know, they understand when you start screwing with their minutes, that's the one thing that gets their attention. Yeah. I can tell you that.
Coach Will has the clipboard. What is besides signing Poku? What is?
Yeah. I'm done. I quit. Yeah. I'm breaking the clipboard. I'm going home.
Throwing the clipboard.
No, I think Jerry had it. I think Jerry has it right. I would definitely add in there that, I'd want to see more three guard lineups. I think that Fox Monk and Ellis lineup was good. I think maybe if you just come off the bench and have that Mitchell Monk Ellis lineup for a little bit, throwing different looks, especially at bench guys, you know, trying to find something out there that shakes people free. I would definitely have a hook for like six different guys on this team, and if it's Harrison Barnes that has to go to the bench and we scoot Kevin Herter down and hope that works. Okay. If it doesn't work after four or five games, we're yanking Herter and we're swip swapping back and forth. It's just going to be, if it's Coach Will, it's general chaos until the end of the year. There isn't a single thing. I like Jerry's more zone, picking up half court or full court a little bit more, but like, no, I would be throwing every bit of spaghetti at the wall to see what the hell's going to stick before the playoffs, because there is a world where they make it to the second round. But that world is not the one we currently live in without some sort of changes. And whatever I got to do to get Trey Lyles to stop pump faking and driving and just shoot the damn ball when he's open, that's it. That's it. I'm winning Coach of the Year in these last 19 games just on that alone.
I do like that, you know, your thoughts on the small lineup a little bit. You know, one reason is, you know, and I think you could play Herter at small, you know, with the small lineup that way as a small forward, because he rebounds pretty well, you know, and then the fact that, you know, with Keegan at the four, he rebounds pretty good for small forward, but he rebounds better than Barnes. Everybody rebounds better than Barnes. So you're not, and then take the fact that, this Domas gets enough rebounds for two guys. I mean, you can play small and still rebound because you got the best rebounder in the known world right now. Yeah. I don't know how he does it, but because he can't, you know, but he does, he gets them. So that's all.
All right, Jerry, we're going to roll over to you for the Reynolds wrap up. What do you got for us today?
Well, I've got a couple. I've always said, I just decided, you know, people know, already know I'm kind of goofy, so I won't. But I love quotes and sayings. And, you know, and it's just some of those things that I've always said kind of stick with me, I've used over the years. And a couple of these are a couple I enjoyed from John Wooden. Of course, I'm a big, you know, he's a hero of mine and mm-hmm. and all. And I always thought his things that he used and said he used made a lot of sense. So here's a couple. You can motivate by fear. You can motivate by reward. But both methods are only temporary. The only lasting motivation is self.
That's good.
And then competitive greatness begins at the end of your comfort zone. And you know, those two really, those just two that really have always stuck with me, and I like to share with players. And you know, sometimes they act like it really stuck with them, but it's true. You know, I think those are, you know, in my mind, that's the truth of the situation. You can deal with it or not, but that's how it is. Well, that's it. So
that's it,
yeah,
we're stealing off of John Wooden today.
Yeah, we are. I think
good person to steal from.
Yes, Coach Wooden wouldn't mind.
He wouldn't tell. That's exactly right. Well, on behalf of the King's Herald, I want to thank you guys for listening to another episode. Shout out to the King's subreddit and to Reddit user Blackfire, who Jerry on the King's subreddit the other day, 2 weeks ago, posted that that they like Jerry Reynolds and the King's Herald podcast because Jerry's funny and there's never any gambling advertisements. So Blackfire, I promise, if a gambling company came, we would lock Jerry in a basement and make him read them 16 hours a day if they paid us enough money. But until then, we're staying out of the advertising game when it comes to gambling. We gamble in private in the quiet of our homes.
Yeah, and I tell you, Blackfire, I don't bet on anything. nothing. You know, my life's complicated enough. I don't need a gambling addiction.
So on behalf of Jerry and Tony, I want to thank you guys for listening to another episode. We will see you in 2 weeks, and we'll be just that much closer to a Kings playoff run. So thanks so much, and we'll see you then.